Hi, it's Dave. Welcome to a live stream with Emmett Peppers. And today was a momentous day. It was Tesla hitting $1 trillion market cap, Tesla breaking $1,000, closing above $1,000, being up $115 in a day. I think that's like the most it's ever been up in terms of market cap. A lot of records being broken and a lot of people surprised. So I want to bring up Emmett here. Let's do a live stream and let's get some real time, you know, thoughts and comments out. Lots of stuff going on. Emmett, how's it going?
Good, man. Good to chat. Yeah, exciting. Great day for all of us Tesla bulls, obviously. $115, I was thinking pre-market, I mean pre-split, that would be $575, is that right?
That's insane.
You think about that movement like pre-split, that's like gaining that in one day, like it's like laughable in a way. It seems like what the heck, you know, it's insane. And it's funny, like so many, you probably get it too, but I think, and so many people, like, I think thank us on like direct messages on Twitter and all this. I mean, we're just trying to get the word out there and be transparent about the value we see in Tesla. And it's great to have a positive influence on so many retail investors that say, hey, thanks to you and Dave and others that, you know, appreciate you getting the word out there about Tesla. And it gave me conviction to hold it all this time and make X amount of money and change my life. So it's really, I'm really happy that, you know, we've been doing this for over a year now, or about a year, and you've been doing it even like 2 years, you know, and it's changed people's lives, you know.
I actually I have some different thoughts on that. Like, I'm reticent about taking any credit or, you know, hearing thanks, because, like, investing is so risky. There's a lot of probabilities. And I think, like, you know, as much as Tesla has made it this far and it seems like it was inevitable, there are so many turns and different, you know, things that could have happened. And to get here is actually quite miraculous, I think. You know, a lot of things had to go right. And I think each person just needs to take 100% responsibility for their own decisions completely. And, you know, we're here.
I'm glad we were able to give them the information to help them take that responsibility themselves. Like, really, I don't feel like we should be thanked, but I'm glad we were able to add an extra source of information for them to make that decision themselves.
Yeah, you know? I look at it
just like financial media.
Yeah, I look at it as we're just here. I'm just here to share my thought process, and people can bounce their own thought processes off of that and sharpen it, make it better. But if anyone makes any money on any investment, I think it's 100%, you know,
their
goes
own
to them.
Credit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm just glad we were an extra channel for them to take in information on. Obviously, we're not investment advice. We're just talking about how we believe in Tesla, and everyone makes up their own mind. But, you know, information on Tesla, you know, pro Tesla stuff out there was not so clear. There's a lot of noise out there, and obviously there's been risks all along. We've been talking about risks of it being range bound or all kinds of things. Even when S&P inclusion bet, I said it probably is not going to work out, but it was something I was interested, you know. So yeah, I mean, I think we just have a different view that we can present, and it just adds to the different angles people can kind of take in and decide for themselves what to do.
So when you woke up and you saw the stock gap up, like, what were your thoughts this morning?
Yeah, I mean, I thought last night when the Morgan Stanley upgrade came out, I was like, oh, here we go again. You know, historically, the Morgan Stanley upgrade just seems to be a real zinger to, like, hit that stock price up, you know. And a couple times the Goldman Sachs upgrades have helped, but Morgan Stanley more so. And we all knew it was coming, you know, and it just seemed like over the weekend after a big, you know, Tesla is already sort of getting unhinged. You could tell from the last few days after earnings that, like, it's breaking new all-time highs and getting through, like, any, you know, resistance up there. And then Morgan Stanley last night came out with their research report, and I think Sawyer Merritt tweeted, I saw it from him first, and I just looked at it briefly. I mean, once you've seen a couple of these reports, you kind of seen them all, I feel like, and I skimmed through it, and, you know, they make their case. But the fact is, Morgan Stanley has a huge wealth management business, right? Of, you know, very high net worth families, and same with Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. And so when they put out a research report being bullish on Tesla, it gives a you know, not only their institutional clients, you know, research to kind of start buying into Tesla. But I think a lot of the wealth management clients who might have had discussions about Tesla from time to time recently with their clients, not investors, they're, you know, running managed accounts for their clients. Then it gives them an excuse to call their, you know, clients and say, hey, our team came out with this new report. Maybe it's time we buy some Tesla, you know. So I think it just it piles on to a lot of net buying typically. And so, yeah, and then the Hertz news just really compounded it. Yeah, I mean, what did you think when you saw the Morgan Stanley? You probably saw it last night,
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah, last night big. I thought there would be like maybe a 20, you know, 25 points.
That's what I thought, like 20, 30 points,
like, oh, nice. You know.
Keep the momentum going.
Yeah, gap up or something. So when I woke up, it was like 9:50 or something. I was like, oh my gosh. And and then I read the Hertz news. I was like, oh, holy moly, 100,000. Like that's, and the more I thought about it, I'm just like, wow, this is a game changer. I'm not sure like if people are completely digesting like what's going on here. And I wanted to kind of go over things with you tonight, but yeah, I was going to do an episode on just this Hertz thing, but I figure like, hey, I'll just chat with you and we'll just go over the whole thing. But yeah. And the other thing was, when I had Gary Black last week on the show, he was talking about how he gets these reports from brokerages and he sees how a lot of portfolio managers are underweight Tesla. And that's one of his big theses, that portfolio managers are going to be moving to equal weight or at least trying to rebalance a bit after this past quarter. So I thought that that was like a decent backdrop as well. If you do have a lot of people who are skeptical of Tesla and who are underweight managing funds after last quarter, then it's like, okay, let's, you know, get back, you know, in weight. And then also you add the Hertz whole, you know, order. And now it's like, it kind of gives this extra cushion of comfort and confidence to fund managers where they're like, okay, we know the next 4 or 5 quarters is going to be good, but it's like, now we know almost for sure, because Hertz kind of takes away a lot of uncertainty, right? And risk going on. So I thought the combination of kind of underweight, you know, portfolio managers plus kind of this Q3 and then also these the Hertz deal all combined kind of make this thing where it's like, okay, if you're going to get in, then it's best to get in right now, you know, for Tesla, you know, rather than wait like a year or something, or, you know,
it's like
a few more quarters.
Storm. Yeah, I agree. Perfect storm. And yeah, the Hertz thing was huge. It's just like, man, there's a lot to discuss with it. There's a lot of, like, you got to think Elon had his, he must have had, you know, such a big deal. It had to go through Elon and get vetted by Elon, right? He's, you know, his team probably is like, hey, Hertz, Mark Fields is now, maybe Mark Fields contacted Elon directly somehow through a back channel. Mm-hmm. When he came into Hertz as a temporary CEO, like a month ago maybe or something. And maybe one of his first ideas was like, I'm going to get Elon to sell us 100,000 cars, and they negotiated a few things and okay, full price. And Elon said, okay, we'll make sure, when can we get them? And Elon's like, well, we'll get them to you by the end of next year, you know, something like that. And I do kind of wonder if, maybe the timeline of end of next year would have been, I think, put in place by Elon. Like, that's what I read in the Bloomberg report, or heard about it. By the end of next year, they'll start delivering or deliver it all. And I mean, that's the timing of the robotaxi fleet coming online. And I think in Elon's mind, in my opinion, like, I think he's has a pretty aggressive stance on and when robotaxis will be ready, you know, and end of next year seems about right, maybe give or take 1 or 2 quarters either way. Right. And so I do have a lot to think. I mean, what do you think on that? Do you think Elon would have vetted it and personally put a stamp of approval on it too?
Yeah, definitely. So I've got like 7 points on this Hertz deal. I want to go through this with you one by one so that we can cover kind of all angles. I think this is super significant. So the first point is the details, right? So we know it's 100,000 Model 3s at for $4.2 billion. So it comes out to $42,000 each. We know Elon just tweeted earlier today saying there's no discount for Hertz. So it seems like these are the standard range Model 3s, right? That they're picking up for 42.
I don't know if that's set in stone. Like, that probably is the minimum, right? I bet you they could upgrade it if they wanted to and be like, yeah, we want to add, make them long range, or we want to make them a few of them performance models or whatever. I bet you Tesla would have no problem with them upgrading it, but that's probably the minimum terms. I think you're right. Yeah. Standard range, 42,000 a piece. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like also there's no, you know, FSD, you know, they paid for or anything. It just seems like they're getting the same deal as consumers are, which is insane for a 100,000, you know, vehicle order. And I definitely think, you know, obviously if it was anyone but Elon, like they would give, you know, Hertz a huge discount, at least a few thousand. Right. But Elon is so, you know, he's a stickler for this whole thing of not giving discounts. It must have been directly from Elon saying like no discount. Can you imagine that if you're a Hertz and you're like, we're spending $4 billion and you won't even discount like $500 or $1,000, you know?
I think they are getting a discount in a way, because I bet by then the prices will, you know, the rates are going. I mean, prices are increasing every like 3 months. So, you know, by the time they get in delivery, those cars probably are going to be 45,000 or 48,000 or something. You know, they'll probably have a higher starting selling price, but they're ordering it now and locking in that price. So it's not really a discount for their order right now, but
yeah,
you know.
Well, I think another backdrop is the EV tax credit. So I wonder if, because Mark Fields is very connected, obviously, right?
That's true.
As ex, you know, Ford CEO. So, you know, he probably has all these contacts in Washington, et cetera. So he knows whether the EV tax credit is likely going to pass or not. And this is a bullish sign that the EV tax credit is going to pass, because if it passes, then these cars go up like $5,000 at least overnight. You know, because
that's true.
There's no supply. And so he's like, this is a big bet, I think, for the EV tax credit that Tesla will raise the price. So they lock it in before, you know, the EV tax credit. The other thing is Tesla just raised the price of the standard range by, I think, $2,000, right? So I wonder if part of the deal was like, maybe Tesla was saying, hey, we're going to raise prices, like, you know, like, sign this if you want it right now for this current price, you know, you can do it. If not, you'll have to wait, you know, you have to pay $2,000 more like everyone else, right? And they're like, oh my gosh, and they just like say, okay, we'll do it, you know. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they're not getting any, I mean, it hurts. I haven't read the terms of the, you know, the latest terms of this proposed EV tax credit, like the details, the fine print of it, but I don't believe that Hertz is going to be eligible for getting a refund on those cars from the government, right? I mean, it's not individuals buying, it's a business buying it. I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I've read all the drafts and stuff like pretty in detail. It doesn't seem like it excludes companies from buying it. So I think it applies both to individuals and companies.
Really?
So actually they could have just waited and, you know, actually took advantage of the tax credit too. Or they had some leak that's retroactive to, I don't know. I doubt it though, you know? Yeah,
I would think it's when they take delivery of the cars.
That makes sense too,
right? So if they get a delivery end of next year and the credit's in place, but the thing is, I thought there was something in it like if you make over $100,000 or make over $200,000 a year in income as an individual, you have to make less than that to get the credit rebate. You know, so I don't know how it's going to work with businesses, but that's true. Like that guy Mark Fields probably has some kind of insight, you'd think, given how connected he is.
I wonder if it's pretty much, I mean, they're not probably paying the billions of dollars right now. It's like a lock-in price right now, you know? And with the tax credit, they'll probably get the rebate, you know, when they take delivery. Regarding the 14, so they're saying that it's going to happen over the next 14 months. I was reading that actually starting November, you're going to start to see these Model 3s show up at the big locations near airports and big cities and stuff.
They'll send the first few, you know, hundreds to Hertz in November, you think, next month?
Yeah. And then the next 14 months, so by the end of next year, everything will be delivered. That's what it seems like.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So this is going to happen fast. This isn't like 2 or 3 years later. This is, you know, within the you know, starting next month, probably. Yeah.
Now, do you think it's going to be a steady streamline of deliveries to Hertz, or do you think they're just going to deliver the first like couple thousand in November, December, and then the last like 80,000 in, you know, the last quarter of next year? I mean, what do you think? Do you think it'll be just like 20,000 a quarter for the next 5 quarters, or what are your thoughts on how they're going to streamline the deliveries of Hertz here?
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty much, you know, like pretty much even. Like, it's going to be a steady stream, my opinion, you know. I think Tesla could use the big order also to kind of even out things. Like, they'll set aside a certain amount per quarter, and then they'll probably have some flexibility in when they can deliver. But what's tricky about it is it really puts a demand kind of crunch for the Model 3, where it's like, that was Tesla's cheapest car, you know, the Model 3 standard range. And now you've got like 100,000 already pre-ordered. And so, it's like, it's a tough one. Like, if the EV tax credit passes, then will Tesla's cheapest car be even under 50,000 anymore? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be pretty crazy.
Starting price goes up, you know, significantly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's been going up every couple months anyway, it seems like, lately. So they're definitely adjusting for demand and potential, you know, transitory inflation, so to speak.
Inflation is a big topic. Elon's getting into this, and Jack Dorsey and Cathie Wood. I kind of lean a little bit on the Cathie Wood's angle, where I think we're going to see, I'm not sure if it's right at the end of the year, but hopefully we'll see some, you know, softening of prices and price increases. But then who knows? Like, Elon's saying, like, you know, there's a lot of inflationary pressure, and he knows a lot from, you know, just his suppliers.
Yeah, him and Jack Dorsey both say that. Yeah, but I don't, you know, I'm kind of in the view that I would trust on macroeconomics. I kind of trust Cathy more than, like, you know, the best entrepreneurs of our time. You know, she's an entrepreneur in her own right, but, you know, I think from a macroeconomics, she just seems to, it's such a complicated thing. No one understands macro economies very well, I don't think. Like, there's too many variables, and but she seems to have a beat on it as much as anyone that I've seen. So we'll see. We'll see how transitory it is. Is it, you know, 6 months or 2 years or 10 years? You know, 10 years would be like, okay, that's serious inflation, you know, but if it's just for another 1 year from here, then maybe, it's acceptable.
Yeah. On inflation note, I think Tesla actually is a decent inflation hedge, because you want to be invested in companies or in assets or whatever that can match, at least match the rise in price of inflation. And so with Tesla, you're dealing with kind of a premium brand, you know, luxury product with high, you know, lots of people wanting it. So they're able to raise the price as much as inflation goes up. Right. And so they could raise price and keep their margin and, you know, keep their profits, et cetera. I'm not too worried about inflation, at least as an investment, you know, an investment perspective, you know, with Tesla.
Yeah. Now back to the Hertz thing. I mean, we haven't finished talking about that one, right? We got more things. Now, I think this transforms Hertz as a business. Like, I think Elon, he's got to think highly of Hertz to give them this order. Like, they're probably not the first institutional, you know, fleet order trying to get a deal with Tesla done. You know, others have probably approached Tesla looking for discounts and maybe been turned away, or maybe others have even approached Tesla and been okay without a discount, but Elon's turned them down, you know? We don't know that. This could be one of many potential fleet orders coming to Tesla that finally Elon said, okay, we'll do it with Hertz, you know? That's a possibility. And if that was the case, like, he must think highly of Hertz's future. You know, maybe there's some sentimental, like, you know, value in the name brand, and, you know, they've been restructured, and Mark Fields, maybe he's friendly with or something from the past of Ford or whatever. And so, you know, it's interesting that he might have just chosen Hertz amongst the other brands if they were competing, if they've all been trying to get a big fleet deal with Tesla. Do you think that's a possibility, or do you think that this is just the first one that came into his pocket?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both, because to do 100,000 like Teslas within, like, you know, practically a year, you're basically that's a huge move. Like, Hertz has bought 500,000 cars and trucks total, so this is 20% of their entire fleet.
Yeah,
which my guess is they're probably going to sell a bunch of their cars as well. I don't know if there's any other rental car company that would be that bold. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
you got to think others have come to Tesla, if not for 100,000, for like 10 or 20 or maybe 50,000. I mean, Uber a long time ago, Travis Kalanick, you know, was famous on some publicly saying they want to buy 100,000 Teslas when they're self-driving. You know, maybe even Uber's approached Tesla recently and said, we want to, you know, and I don't know. I feel like Hertz, there's some kind of, I don't want to say favoritism, but just some kind of, like, Elon handpicked Hertz as like, okay, we're going to make I'm going to appoint you to be like a valuable business in the future and give you 100,000 of my robo taxis early on, you know, and be the first big fleet operator. And I think that instantly, like in my mind, transforms Hertz's future dramatically. Like, you know, with the robo taxi call option here. So with the robo taxi turning on to 100,000 cars at once, fleet operating, that's like right now Hertz is trading as an over the counter stock with like a 12 or 13 billion market cap. I mean, that thing's very inexpensive if that happens, you know, versus, you know, who knows for sure when and for sure if this like level four, level five robo taxi stuff is going to come to fruition. But I know you and I kind of think it will. It's just a matter of time, whether it's next year or 3 years or 5 years from now. But Hertz is definitely in pole position here to kind of be the first huge fleet operator to, you know, benefit, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, I think about 100,000 vehicles. And my guess is Elon will just let them do what any other owner would do, which is if you could pick up FSD, you could do a monthly, maybe subscription.
Yes, or subscriptions.
You know, and you stick the cars on the robotaxi network when it's available, and Tesla takes a cut, you know, they get a cut. But yeah, it's like, it is an ingenious move in a sense, because as investors, you're going to place a premium on Hertz now as a stock because it's got this extra call option. But then also they've made this transition to EVs, or making it faster than anyone else. So of any rental car company, who do you want to bet on? Right.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it's amazing advertising, because it's like, they've got the best car now, you know, to rent. So if you're at the airport, which car rental company, are you going to choose? You're going to do Hertz. Like, you know, Jason DeBolt tweeted that he just like, you know, signed up for their rewards program. And I was like, I looked at him like, hey, I'm going to sign up too. So I just signed up and it's funny, man. So here's the other thing. A second part is, this is the ex-Ford CEO that's become the Hertz CEO right now. And he said something. He said, Tesla's the only manufacturer that can manufacture EVs at scale. And I was thinking about that. And this guy, you know, he was right in the thick of the competition with Tesla. And yet he's pretty much like become Tesla's biggest fan, you know, by buying 100,000 vehicles. And I was thinking, he said something which is pretty interesting, which is, he said only Tesla can manufacture like these EVs at scale. I think he's not talking about production. I think it's much deeper. I think the issue is you can't do mass production of, let's say, 300, 400, 500,000 cars per year, because these other auto manufacturers don't have the demand for a vehicle that could do 300, 400, 500,000 vehicles a year. If you don't have that demand, you can't produce at efficiency, at cost efficiency, enough to bring down the cost so much, you know, to a place where you can actually make money off of these cars. So Tesla's the only one who has an EV that has enough demand to carry $400,000 or $500,000 cars per year, which gives them that cost efficiency, which, you know, it's a virtuous cycle here, right?
Yeah.
And there's no other auto manufacturer that has that in place right now, right? And so in a sense, Ford is saying like Tesla's the only game in town, you know, for EVs, really.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I mean, he obviously, you know, I don't know how he left Ford though. Like, did he leave with like resentment? Was he like kicked out? I mean, I'm sure he must have gotten some kind of golden parachute and left on like, you know, friendly terms, you'd think, you know. But, you know, it's possible that he just like resents Ford to some degree, the way that he left or whatever, and he's just trying to stick it to them by saying that too. I don't know, but I would say that he probably, I'm more, you know, we know that Tesla can produce electric cars massively and mass produce them more efficiently than anyone else. And I think he probably truly believes that too. But him saying that, you know, is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Another angle is like, why didn't Hertz buy 100,000 of another car? Let's say like a BMW 3 Series car or Camry or whatever. And when you think about that, it's like, that would almost be like a death move for Hertz.
Yeah.
It's like you've got this unreliable car with high like cost of ownership, and it doesn't even probably bring in that many people to your rental car place. You have to charge higher. It's just, you know, it would be crazy to do that. But to buy 100,000 Teslas, it kind of makes sense, you know, because you get such a big boost of demand and recognition. And these cars are super reliable. They have super high resale value, you know, like it's just, yeah, it's just,
they're going to be worth more. Like they could rent them out for a year and sell them for $50,000 by that time, you know, like, or perhaps, if the full self-driving, like the biggest asset increase in history, they could sell them for $100,000 a piece, you know, if that goes into them, if that gets uploaded into them all, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I think Mark Field, he seems to know enough to make the right move here. And Hertz can be this is a transformational move for Hertz potentially, where suddenly instead of just being another rental car company that's kind of figuring it out as they go, now they're like the first major robo-taxi fleet operator in the, you know, in the world. And maybe I think it said their initial order of 100,000. So they might order another 100,000 after that, another 100,000, you know, so they'll probably get priority among fleet orders if they did it the first time with Tesla. It also makes it easier for Tesla versus having to deal with 100. Think about the sales expense, you know, dealing with 100,000 individual customers, teaching all of them all the basics and making sure they all have whatever, you know. Now you can streamline it to one kind of institutional customer at full price, you know, like the margins on that experience overall is way better for Tesla as well.
Yeah. I mean, it works out both, you know, for Hertz and Tesla. Like this is one model. This is probably, you know, the standard range, you know, Model 3. So for Tesla, it's just a big order. For Hertz, it's a big order. So it's like the same car, you know? So any like maintenance, any like, you know, cleaning slash just everything is can be standardized across, you know, their whole
fleet. Do you think they'll have like some software in there, like for Hertz only, like in the screen? I would think so. For 100,000 cars, I would think that the Tesla would do something there to like let Hertz have some kind of app within those cars for, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Like, did you read that email reply? I think it was to Kim Paquette, who Elon said, Kim asked if you could take your Tesla card and swipe it on a Hertz rental and go in and your profile would just be will pop up and, you know, automatically adjust your car. And then Elon said, yes, that feature is coming. So if you think about that, what Elon is talking about there, he's saying, we're going to make it where you can go into any Hertz rental car and your key will work and your profile will be loaded, you know, on the car. And so he's definitely doing something for Hertz, you know?
But I don't know if that's Hertz specific. I feel like he's hinted towards that in the past to be like, okay, we're going to save your profile so that it works on any car you go to, you know, with your phone or whatever. Like your phone will recognize your profile on the car and all the settings are in the cloud now and it'll automatically pull up your seat, Justin's. So I'm not sure if that's Hertz specific, but he did respond to the tweet that referenced Hertz. You're right.
Yeah.
So I mean, maybe they're doing something.
Yeah. I mean, it would be awesome if you just walk up to the car and, you know, swipe your car and then actually that's your check into the car, you know, and then
it's your phone. I think it'll be your phone, right? The phone, Bluetooth, like it'll probably be the, you know.
Oh, that's true. Maybe your phone. Yeah. Yeah, either one. But it would be great if Tesla somehow adds some software to integrate the check-in, right, of your car. That would be awesome. Just walk up to your car, you know, just know your space.
A friend of mine, Dimitri, you met him at one of the events with me. Yeah. He just texted me saying that there's a 30% commercial EV rebate on the bill.
That's right. Yes.
Huge. That's huge if that's true. Like if that's the case and Hertz is going to get 30% rebate on this, that would be huge. I don't know if that applies to this, but if that did, that would be a no brainer. They're going to get like $12,000 right off the bat or $13,000, $14,000
right off the bat. I forget the exact print. I guess if it passes, we'll find out. Yeah. The exact number. Yeah, definitely. So I'm wondering, have you thought about at all, like, okay, so if this is over the next 14 months, you have 100,000 extra cars, what's the impact going to be on 2022 earnings and, you know, quarterly numbers? I'm just thinking like, you know, Zach made this comment on earnings where he's like, we've been like surprised, demand is like crazy, you know, we're backlogged all this stuff. I think obviously he knew about this and he was like, it was ready probably the final stages.
He must have known it's in the works.
Yeah. Everything was pretty much done probably by the time that happened. But it seems like, you know, this is going to dramatically in a way, like, make demand, I guess, higher slash make production that much more scarce, you know, meaning Tesla's already, you know, production constrained, but now you have an extra 100,000 orders. Thus, it's going to be harder to get a Tesla.
Yeah. Thus, it's going to push out the timeline further, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tesla can charge whatever price and then can make whatever margin. And it just seems like I don't see any negatives in terms of Tesla earnings, right? I see negatives in terms of the consumer who might have to wait longer, you know, because there's 100,000.
I don't think Elon wants that necessarily. Like, I think he wants to favor the consumers over fleet operators. But I don't know, something about this Hertz deal sticks is different and unique, maybe, or he, you know, has a sentimental place for that. Or just he just wanted to. It was a good deal business wise, and they did it. And like you said, it helps smooth out deliveries over the quarters if they can deliver them, you know, however much Tesla feels like they need to fill the voids of things each quarter to Hertz's particular locations. So, yeah, I think it doesn't affect Tesla's earnings, so to speak, that much. It's probably because the demand is not an issue, you know, but I think the perception of Tesla's stock, of them potentially not having infinite demand or you know, demand that they can't meet for years to come, it helps solidify that amongst everyone who wasn't a Tesla bull already, like us, you know, like, you know, I think there's a lot of Wall Street and just investors out there that are aware of Tesla, and they all think competition is coming, and, you know, they still think like, oh, Tesla, it would produce more if they had higher demand. No, Tesla's producing as many cars as they possibly can and delivering every single one of them. But now with this extra $100,000 car order by Hertz, it really makes them think twice about things and start thinking like, wait a second, what's going on here? How come no other company is getting a big and full price? What? That's crazy. You know? And so Mark Fields, and every little piece, every crumb you learn about this deal is like, you know, you put the pieces of the puzzle together, and it makes the people who had any skepticism on Tesla kind of realize like, wait, Tesla's the real deal here. Maybe all the bulls are right. You know? And I think that added to the sentiment today of Tesla just kind of going this historic high. Yeah
berserk today, crazy.
So it's so psychological. I love stocks and investing because it's like, you know, people talk about valuations and this valuation should be that or shouldn't have made the valuation go up, and that's all shoulds, you know, but the market is, you know, what it is, and it's based on mass psychology and herd mentalities, and it's very different than what should be. In the end, it becomes what it should be. You know, like in the end, fundamentals will win out, you know, in almost every stock, you'd think, you know, with, but in the meantime, you know, things swing wildly back and forth. It's kind of, it's fun to kind of partake in or just observe, you know?
Yeah. I think actually a lot of things have worked out in Tesla's favor over the past few quarters that have kind of all led up to this. Like, for example, this whole global supply chain crunch, it's like Tesla has navigated almost flawlessly, you know, like it barely is showing up in their earnings, yet all the other manufacturers are having a hard time producing cars. And, you know, the whole demand, because other car manufacturers are having a hard time producing cars, the pricing for new cars and used cars are just off the charts right now. It's like crazy. And Tesla's able to charge whatever they can or whatever they want. And all of this is just, I think, helping their earnings and just kind of showcasing or highlighting Tesla's ability to innovate and how the robustness of their demand. And it's just showing how different Tesla is from all the other automakers. Like if Tesla also had to, you know, like cut their production, all this stuff, like all the other auto manufacturers, then you'd be like, oh man, it's just like another car company, right?
But they've been doing the opposite. They're trying to figure out different ways to get new microchips and such. Changing their software so that the chips they can find will work, you know? And they're not another car company. Yeah. It's becoming more apparent to most people. I think people are starting to realize with this $1 trillion market cap, you know, psychological milestone here, people are starting, more and more people are considering the possibility that Tesla can become the most valuable company in the world. I think, you know, we've talked about that many times, and I've been heavily convicted on that by the end of this decade, but maybe 2025, maybe it'll be even sooner. I don't know. It seems, you know, but I think passing this $1 trillion market cap, news headlines all over the place about it. It forces people to take another look into Tesla who are skeptical. Like, hey, yeah. what am I missing here? Sort of like personally, I was always skeptical of like Netflix, you know, early on. I was like, this Netflix streaming service, what, how is this worth, you know, hundreds of billion or $100 billion or $50 billion, whatever it was at the time. It was early on. And I had to, like, every time it reached a new milestone, I'd have to take another look and be like, wait, maybe this is like a transformational business, you know? And so I think more people are going to come onto the Tesla bandwagon. And yeah, it's hard to see. It's hard to know when the bandwagon, when the momentum stops, you know, like you see periods in the past of whether it's Netflix or Apple or Amazon, you know, these stocks can really run up for a while. And, yeah, it's exciting. Yeah, I'm excited for what's to come. Oh, you know, although we know that the stock has, you know, will eventually probably drop 20 to 40% again at some point, as it has in the past many times, even more in the past. But I think, you know, I don't know when that would be, you know, but at some point there will be a high, and it's going to come, it's going to kind of come back down 20 to 40%. Yeah. It'll be a little bit of a digestion there.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, it's like a Tesla passed Facebook to be high, more valuable than Facebook as a company. And like, that's amazing too, because Facebook is just a cash cow. And for Tesla to, you know.
But they're not growing like anymore that much, right? Facebook, I mean, I feel like
Facebook
their growth
is growing decently. I mean, of course, like it's 20, not 50%.
30%, something like that, I mean, maybe. But yeah.
Yeah, but at the scale that Facebook is at, that's amazing. You
that's
know?
Big.
It's huge. But yeah, definitely Tesla's in a completely different
50%
league.
50% plus for Tesla, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember back several years ago, was it 2016 or 17, maybe 18, Elon was at the shareholder meeting was saying Tesla could become one of the largest companies in the world.
Yeah,
and that was kind of like the first type of, you know, time he actually like announced it, his
or
idea that it could
in
be
in 2000,
like huge.
I think it was 2013 or 2014, maybe early 2015, but it was 2014 or early 2015 at the latest. It was when I was still living in Connecticut. I remember there was a shareholder or a quarterly earnings call where he answered some question and he said he thinks that Tesla could become $1 trillion market cap. And it was like laughable at the time by most people, but people like me and you were like, maybe so, you know, and we had to like think about it. And at that time, Tesla was like a $50 billion market cap company, you know, you know, but here we are, you know, 6 or 7 years later and $1 trillion market cap surpassed.
You know, what's interesting about the whole Elon Musk kind of, if you look back, like he really forecasted a lot of these market cap valuation projections, like early in the day, 2012, his whole thing was, if we get to the Model 3, we'll get to at least $40 billion market cap. You know, because that was his compensation plan. Like Tesla had to reach $40 billion in market cap by 2018, you know, to deliver the Model 3, et cetera, a few hundred thousand of them. And so he basically said, hey, if we do the Model 3, we'll get to at least $50 billion market cap.
Yeah.
And Tesla was under $4 billion in 2012, early 2013. And then, but then if you just take it another step, it's like, okay, what happens after that, you know, like, because the early Model 3 is just the beginning, you know, it's not the end, obviously. So you just project it out further. And Elon's, you know, whole second compensation plan, the 2018 one was basically Tesla has to get at least $650 billion market cap. He thought, I mean, this is my angle. My angle is I think Elon thought it would take a lot longer.
I did
his,
too, yeah. I
yeah, his 2018 compensation plan is for 10 years. He has 10 years to deliver, like, to get Tesla above $650 billion market cap and a few other milestones. But, yeah, I think definitely, I think the profitability of what Tesla is experiencing right now, like, how fast it's growing its, like, operating margin and how fast it's able to just, you know, ramp up without any major hiccups. It's actually quite astounding right now. And I think that's, you know, all part of this, you know, crazy revaluation that's going on, you know, for Tesla.
Definitely.
Okay. So I want to talk about this, another angle here. So we've talked about this in the past, but the power of a test drive of in a Tesla. Like, I've always thought, like, you know, hey, if people just get more test drives in a Tesla, they're going to buy the car. You know, like, it's not too hard to convince a person to buy a Tesla if you get them to drive the car, you know?
Yeah.
And I think It's one of the most, I guess, powerful forms of marketing or persuasion. But yet, like, I don't think Tesla has completely, like, you know, leveraged that to its full potential. And I think what this Hertz deal does, it actually takes it on a crazy, it amplifies test drives in a crazy manner. Like, think about it, 100,000, so 20% of all Hertz cars will be Model 3s by the end of next year.
Okay? Yeah.
And these cars get rented like dozens of times throughout the year.
It'll be the highest demand car Hertz has, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, exactly. But like, how many millions of people are going to be driving these cars, if you think about it? Because rental cars are just constant, you know, influx
cycling
of people. So you're going to see millions of people.
What's the average rental time? Like 3 days or a week? I don't know. What do you think?
Probably three or four days, you know, over the weekend or something. Yeah. But yeah, if it's like 50 to 100 people per year per car, I don't know. I mean, we're talking about 5 million people potentially. I don't know. Of course, there's repeat customers, et cetera. But if you think about the sheer number of test drives, that's going to lead to so many purchases of a car.
It's just going to accelerate the purchases. I mean, Tesla doesn't have a demand issue whatsoever. They're production constrained, but this is just going to compound the supply demand contortion Tesla is experiencing, you know, and it's going to make the wait time even longer. Like, even though they're ramping up Giga Austin and Giga Berlin, maybe it'll help maybe those will help enough, but it's really going to accelerate demand with all the new test drives people can do as they rent these cars. And this is the initial order for 100,000. Like, other rental car companies, Enterprise, you know, they're going to probably try to place order. You know, if you don't have Teslas, Hertz is going to be the number one choice by everyone, you know. So there's going to be competitors, you know, trying to do the same thing. And I wonder if it's going to, like, if the demand is off the hook like it is already, is there a time frame? And there's more, you know, you got to think that there's other fleet operator potentials, you know, institutional customers reaching out to Tesla like, hey, no fair. Why did you give it to Hertz and not us? Or we'll do the same thing as Hertz. When can we do it? You know, there's other people banging on Tesla's door trying to get the same deal or something similar. At what point do you think does Elon kind of say, okay, we'll take on as many fleet orders that come in at regular price versus we're going to keep prioritizing consumer deliveries, and then fleet orders will be kind of like a backstop to, or it'll be a side project on top of that. Do you think that at some point, like end of next year, or there'll be some like deadline almost? I'm wondering, like, I'm just speculating. What if there's like a deadline Elon has in mind, like end of next year, I'll communicate that all consumers who don't get delivery by then, we don't know when we'll be able to deliver your car because we've got so many fleet operators that we're going to start fulfilling orders for after that. So there could be like a mass exodus to put their orders in to get their orders fulfilled by end of next year. I don't know. I'm just like thinking up weird ideas, but I could see something like that happening, and it could coinciding with the timing of that, the robo-taxis being turned on in his mind, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do you think there's going to be some event like that or, you know, horizon like that?
I don't know if there would be like per se an event, but I would imagine that I think a lot depends on this EV tax credit, because if it passes, which I think there's, you know, likelihood it does, I think Tesla will turbocharge like their production plans. So I think we know that Fremont's going to try to like expand by 50%, but I think the big thing is Austin.
They'll have to build no factory. I mean, they're already turbocharging it, right? I mean, I don't know what else they could be doing to not turbocharge it already.
I think Austin can manufacture a lot more cars, and it has a lot more land than people realize. So
they could
build like a large
2 million a year capacity or something.
Yeah, something crazy at Austin, and build a lot of Model 3s. The other thing is like I think what the missing a couple missing things in this whole story is the 4680 cell is going to make the car go longer but for cheaper. And I don't think people like completely grasp this, at least non-Tesla, you know, bulls. It's like you're going to have a car that fundamentally is going to be cheaper, of course with the front and rear castings as well and the structural battery pack and the new production methods, but you know and yet it's going to have a higher range. So this standard range that they're producing right now could be like over 300 miles, but it could be cheaper for them to make. So actually reduce the price, you know, for under $40,000, you know, but be a fundamentally better car. So they could, that's how they, Tesla is increasing demand over time. They're making better cars, you know? And
this I wouldn't be surprised if all the Hertzes are from Shanghai, you know, because it's going to Europe, a lot of them too. And I wouldn't be surprised if they just do them all the, what is it, the lithium phosphate? Is that what they're doing in out of Shanghai?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they just have Shanghai build 100,000 in one, you know, and have these all go to, even if some of them are going to the U.S., you know. I don't know. I feel like they could be the new 4680s going into some of these Hertzes, but I feel like they're going to want them to be uniform and all, like, almost identical. Yeah. What do you think?
I don't think they'll ship from Shanghai, because I think most of Hertz locations are probably in the U.S., maybe Europe. And so,
yeah,
it makes sense. Maybe the European ones could be like Shanghai sent.
Yeah,
that makes sense. But the U.S. ones definitely will be just from the U.S., I think.
I mean, their highest margin cars are the Shanghai exported ones, right? Yeah.
Yeah. A couple other things. So it's going to be interesting, because once people get to the Hertz location, you're going to see this interesting contrast where people are going to see the difference between a Tesla and a regular car. Because you have a choice now. Do you want to get a Tesla, or do you want to get a legacy IC car? And the more people choose a Tesla and then they start to like it, it's just gonna dichotomize the whole idea of what a car is. You have a Tesla and then you have everything else, right?
Yeah. And you'll have some people going to Hertz to rent a car, knowing they have to drive very far. And those people, some of those people might want to do a Tesla road trip for the first time using a Tesla. But I bet you a lot of the people using the Tesla for the first time will be the people that just need a car to get around a city for a few days, and they're not going to use more than like 100 miles, and they know there's 300 miles of range or whatever, and they'll just say, oh, I want to try the Tesla for the 100 miles for the next few days. And those people will really like fall in love with the Tesla. Those will be the people that first, you know, try for the first time that might have had hesitation otherwise, you know?
Yeah, definitely. In the live stream, we have Jason says, do you want to try FSD for a day with your Hertz? Definitely interesting idea. Like, you know, Tesla could say, hey, yeah, do you want to try FSD for free, you know, like during your rental period to just try it out? And it's like, oh, sure, you know? Yeah, that's crazy. It's interesting because, like, with my Model 3, I got it like early, super early. So December 2017 build. And if you think about it, that's almost 4 years ago. Like, this is an old car, you know, like by typical standards.
Yeah. you can sell it for more now if you want.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, yeah, gonna sell, it has decent value. But this car, it has the most advanced technology of any car out there, because it has full self-driving beta right now, right?
Yeah.
There is no other car as advanced as this four-year-old car by Tesla. And when you think about that, like, even look at the Model S, like, you know, I had a 2013 Model S as my first, you know, model Tesla. That thing, like, even today, you know, like, 8 years later.
More advanced than almost every other car that's not a Tesla.
Yeah, it's just like, you can't compare it, because this car is just, it's still a car of the future, because, you know, you got the whole screen and everything, the handles, everything is just, like, awesome about that car. But this Hertz decision to buy 100,000 Model 3s, think about it, like, 5 years from now, that model, those Model 3s are still going to be, like, better than any other new car out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be like the best of the best, the most advanced car still, because it'll have, you know, FSD, you know, it's going to be insane.
It's going to be insane. Hertz could transform its business from, like, you know, they might still do rental cars for ICEs, but maybe they'll find, like, hey, our EVs, the Teslas are robo-taxis. We're going to create a whole new business out of these 100,000 robo-taxis and make a lot more money having them run 20 hours a day, you know, for lots of, you know, robo-taxi rides competing with Uber, you know, or whatever. So, yeah, it's a big, they have a lot of optionality now that they have these 100,000, this order kind of locked. It seems like it's locked in, and they're going to get these 100,000 Teslas, and it's just a matter of the robo-taxi, whether it kind of turns on or not at, you know, by the time they get them. And I was kind of thinking that they were going to get most of the 100,000 like the end of next year, but if they're going to, it also makes sense that they get, you know, between 10 and 20,000 or 10 and 25,000 a quarter for the next 5 or 6 quarters. Kind of to help Tesla smooth out its production and delivery cadence and logistics, you know?
Mm, yeah. Steve Leewington says, Hertz will get more value when they renew their vehicles too. It makes so much sense. Yeah, it's like, the question I have is typically, like, these rental car companies, like, they sell their cars pretty fast. You know, they like put a ton of miles and they sell them.
Yeah.
And that's part of their business model. They lease their cars, I guess. But I wonder if maybe they can change that model, because these Teslas can, you know, last like hundreds
million
of
miles,
of miles.
Maybe. Yeah.
And you know, it's not going to be dated in 5 years. These are going to be still state-of-the-art machines, you know?
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, 100,000 semi-sentient robots. Think of it that way. That's what Elon kind of refers to these cars as, you know, recent. Yeah.
Samir says, at what point would you consider Tesla overvalued?
Yeah, I mean, that changes. I mean, I think Tesla will be the largest company in the world by the end of the decade, for sure, if not 2025, you know. So I think the $1 trillion market cap is appropriate, and I've thought that for a while. I mean, you got to, you know, stock price should reflect the future, not the past, or even not even the current, you know, earnings and such. And, you know, I don't know if Tesla was like today, if Tesla was like over, if Tesla was between 5 and 10 trillion market cap today, I'd have to think about it, you know, but there would probably be a reason why it's trading that high today, you know, if it started trading that high. But yeah, I mean, I don't see Tesla being overvalued for a long time, if ever, you know, sort of like Apple. You know, if you were an Apple diehard fan all this time, you would probably never think Apple's been overvalued. And even today, you don't think Apple's overvalued. So yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Where do you think Tesla would be overvalued, or what are your thoughts on that, Dave?
Yeah, like, I actually think there is a place Tesla can be overvalued, in the sense that you're paying for the potential, right, for growth and future cash flows, but you have to offset that with the risk, with execution risk. Maybe they won't. Something will happen. You know, like, there's a lot of things that happen, you know, in life, and that we don't expect. And that risk, we have, like, you have to factor that in always. And so if there was no risk and Tesla was 100% for sure could execute at this completely, you know, top world-class level for the next 20 years, then yeah, it's like, you know, it's more of a no-brainer. And I think it's easy to discount risk and to say, oh, you know, I believe in the future of Tesla, which obviously I do, but there is something where, yeah, there is always a certain level of execution risk. And I think there comes a time where, yeah, there could be mania and exuberance in the markets and overall where, like, for example, like, you know, there have been different times in the markets where it's just like, you look back and you're like, hey, that was overvalued at that time. The great companies, usually they execute at such a high level that they make up that value, meaning it was just more so their value was early, right? It was like a few years early, or sometimes even several years early, but they make it up because they execute and their financials basically justify that high valuation. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's the big debate for Tesla going forward is, like, you know, the debate has been lost by the bears in terms of, you know, Tesla isn't growing, or there's no demand, and it's going bankrupt, and all this stuff. All that stuff is lost. But the enduring, I think, argument that we're going to be seeing for the foreseeable future for many years is the valuation question. And I think actually that's legit, you know, because valuation is subjective. It's personal. Investing is personal. People have different risks, risk tolerance. They see the future differently.
They see the future differently is the difference. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a great, I think, argument to have, you know. It value is determined basically on the future execution, and that, you know, we evaluate in different ways. And so I'm actually very open to people who have different ideas, you know, on valuation, because hey, it's like, it's your investment decision, right? You think it's going to go a certain way, and you're willing to pay a certain price, right? And that's I think great to have that type of at least thinking for yourself.
Yeah. Like, you had Gary Black on a few days ago. That was really good, a good interview you had. And I know he doesn't place any value on Robotaxi yet, right? But he still has his $1,200 price target. And I can understand that, you know, I can understand that argument. How do you put a value on something you don't know how to value? You know, like Robotaxi, like, he doesn't know the probability of it actually coming to fruition. And he doesn't, you know, no one really knows that, really, you know. And it's just such a kind of strange thing to try to put a value on, is like, okay, a probability that this robotaxi software is going to kick into full gear by X time. You know, I think ARK Investment did the best job I saw in trying to create their Monte Carlo, you know, scenario for where they'd value it if it does happen or it doesn't happen, you know, but it's difficult to value stocks and put a valuation on something that a future with a future that's has certain uncertainties built into it that you just can't really define easily. You know, you can know what the best, you can speculate on what the best case would be, but you don't, you, and you can put your own probability on that, but that's as best as you can do really, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The robotaxi. Yeah. It's going to be crazy because I think the reason why I'm bullish overall is like either way I see it bullish. Like if robotaxi takes a long time, I still think as long as Tesla is in the far lead, meaning they're like still innovating as fast as they are right now, you're going to see that value be shifted into kind of like the option and the utility of having this amazing driver assistance. I mean, it's like even right now, and it's like still 2021, when I use FSD, especially this version 10 build, I'm actually kind of impressed. Before, in version 9, I was kind of like, man, this is kind of crazy. Version 10, I'm actually using it almost all the time when I'm driving, and I'm actually more relaxed. I'm like, this is actually helping me a lot.
Is it like the autopilot where like when you go on the same routes you've used it on before, you get more comfortable because you know for the most part it handles that route, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Is that sort of the comfort level you get with it?
Yeah, that's the comfort level. And it's actually less unpredictable. It's actually kind of, you know, kind of evened out. The version 9 was a little bit rough on certain edges, but so I mean, even if Tesla just keeps on their execution, they're gonna within 6 to 12 months they'll have a super amazing value add in just this, you know, autopilot on local streets, and that will just increase the demand, and Tesla will be able to monetize that, you know, in their cars. If there is like the time in the near future where they do flip the switch and let's say, you know, it does robotaxi, that's a second, another option call in a sense, you know, where they can have a whole new revenue stream and revenue model, which is going to be insane.
Now, do you think, what do you think about the timing of those NTSB comments today? Did you see that, the comments they put out? Obviously, Missy Cummings, her appointment 2 days ago. But NTSB, the chairperson, or the, you know, Jennifer, I can't remember her name, but she put out some comments about how she's disappointed, or she wants, you know, Tesla hasn't built in the safety they asked for and they wanted to recall it or something. And it came out today, like in the middle of the day, right in the midst of Tesla's run up, and it just seems suspicious that they kind of like were trying to throw, it was like trying to put water on a hot stock, you know, that's kind of running up fast. And, you know, there's something there with the NTSB and NHTSA, like now taking on Missy Cummings and asking for all that data just a few months ago, that seemed kind of strange. And, you know, saying that Tesla should issue a recall, even though it's a software update, they need to formally do a recall, even though it's a software update, it's just improving something that was never, you're not like fixing something, they're just adding an improvement on it, you know? So there's something there. And I know Elon is very principled, you know, in nature. And, you know, he's said he's not doing a PR department, you know, I think it's out of principle. And maybe he doesn't want to do any kind of like formal lobbying on this stuff, like, you know, where the unions and the legacy OEMs are against lobbying against Tesla and you're starting to see maybe results of that with, you know, Missy Cummings coming to NHTSA and the NTSB having this kind of Tesla bear running it and stuff. But maybe the deal with Hertz and maybe other institutional operators, maybe that'll help Tesla, because these people are so invested in Tesla's robo taxi working out that maybe they'll have their formal PR people help fight back for Tesla's technology. Maybe that'll be sort of helpful. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting point. I mean, you're spending $4 billion on these cars, right? You have a huge incentive, right? For autopilot, for full self-driving to work and to do well. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the NTSB, I mean, my understanding is they don't really have any like power. They just give
influence, supposedly.
They just give suggestions. I mean, NHTSA does have power. And that's where Missy Cummings' appointment does concern me. I mean, in my interview with Professor Leo Kogwan, he stated that he thinks the biggest risk to Tesla is governments. And Tesla kind of getting too big and governments like coming in, you know, restricting Tesla. And he made this interesting point. He's like, he thinks Tesla should like divvy up, you know, the goods to more people and make more people happy, you know, especially in, you know, country. Like he's saying, if they have such a hard time in the US, imagine how much harder it's going to be in these other countries, you know, that it isn't their homegrown country, et cetera. But yeah, I think that's one of the challenges. I'm glad Elon does have a lot of lobbying experience with SpaceX.
Yes.
So he's not new to this. So he understands how it works. But I mean, Elon does seem to be making a big bet. He believes that technology and data will win out over, you know, all this political whatever.
You would think so. But you better believe that that first full self-driving beta accident that, like, God forbid, killed someone somehow, you know, like it's going to be on video. Like what the NTSB and NHTSA are doing right now, I see coming, all the pieces are in place. And even Reuters is running news with this headline of NTSB saying, you know, Tesla needs to shut down its full self-driving, we suggest, and all that. Mm-hmm. Like, once you have that major full self-driving beta accident, like the first one, you know, statistically, it's impossible to avoid. It's going to happen, whether it's after 100,000 beta testers or 10,000 beta testers. I don't know. But statistically, it's going to happen sooner or later. And it's going to be like new, like they're going to try to take advantage of it as much as possible. And it's going to be dangerous. You know, we've talked about this many times, that first kind of full self-driving accident where someone dies from it. The statistics will be thrown out the window initially. You know, it'll just be emotional clickbait headlines and people will, they'll get a certain amount of attention and news coverage from that. People like me and you and people on Twitter that follow Tesla, you know, cooler heads, will obviously, people that are not up to date on statistics of Tesla's safety will not react that way because they're going to be caught off guard by these headlines. So it's going to be an interesting test to see how the full self-driving can weather this kind of propaganda.
Mm-hmm, definitely. David C. Cerrito says, Elon Musk is my name and innovation is my game. So this reminds me of the whole wealth tax discussion that's happening right now in Washington. And so supposedly Senator Sinema from Arizona is against kind of raising the corporate and individual taxes. So they're trying to find another way to get some tax revenue to pay for their big infrastructure and spending plan. So Pelosi and Janet Yellen and Ron Wyden and several others are exploring what they call, it's a mark-to-market billionaire tax, where you basically say you have to pay tax right now on all of your unrealized capital gains. And for Elon,
for their liquid assets, right? It's like they're doing it, I think, initially just for the liquid assets. So like a lot of billionaires that just own private companies are like not worrying about it now. But everyone like Elon or anyone who are big billionaires that own public companies, they're all going to be targets.
Yeah. So for Elon, this is going to be completely devastating if it passes. If you think about it, like his entire like Tesla holdings are unrealized capital gains, basically.
Yeah.
So
what is he? Does he own like $200 billion worth of Tesla? Is that what it is? Something like that? He owns like 20% or something.
Yeah. I think he has over 20 million shares.
So what? Now he has to pay $100 billion in taxes on that. Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the capital. gains tax rate. And it also depends whether or not he has to pay California taxes on that or not. But
oh, you better believe they're going to get their hands in that pot. No way they're not getting their hands in that pot. No way.
Yeah. I'm sure they have lots of lawyers already looking into it. But yeah, I mean, it's possible. Hypothetically, it's possible that, if he has $200 billion in unrealized capital gains and he has to pay up to, who knows, you know, $100 billion, he would have to sell up to like half of his shares and get rid of him to pay these taxes. That would be the biggest, like craziest thing I think perhaps any ever government has done to the most kind of prolific innovator and entrepreneur that's helping the world with, you know, the biggest type of existential risks, right?
Now, how would that even work? Like, I mean, I think the Fed would at the very least if you had to sell like $100 billion of Tesla like pretty quickly, or make deals to allocate it out to Warren or other institutional whatever, I mean, that would be bad news for the stock. I mean, the stock would be like, whoa, yeah. We're gonna, that's like $100 billion capital raise in a way, almost, you know. It's like diluting the stock in a way. So like, you know, I mean, you'd think that the government would set up like some special escrow account that Elon could put his shares into, that the federal government then owns those shares. I don't know. That's what I would think. So it doesn't kill this Tesla stock price overnight virtually. But I don't know if the government's smart enough to do that in a clean way. You know, they just might be like, give us our money, figure it out. You know, I don't know. It's
When you talk about that, it reminds me of some type of confiscation, you know, the government seizing, like,
well,
you
that's
know?
What they're doing. They're confiscating his wealth for, you know, that's what they're doing.
So I was looking into this a couple of days ago, and there's a couple economists at UC Berkeley, unfortunately my alma mater, but they're very liberal, and they have come up, and they're kind of leading the thought on wealth tax in some ways. But
oh my God.
They have a paper where they, in April of 2021, they said, okay, here's how you raise $1 trillion over 10 years from billionaires doing this exact tax. So this is the blueprint, I think, that all these politicians are going off of. And in this blueprint essay, their whole thing is, okay, we do mark to market, and it's a one-time tax. So it's not every year. It's like, just do it right now. And it's like retroactive, so you can't back out. You can't leave the country. You can't renounce your citizenship and like leave. It's basically, it's already too late. You know, it's like they made it so you can't escape. And then you have to pay the tax over 10 years. You are charged interest on the tax you owe. And they're like at a very reasonable 1.7% annual like interest rate, right? They're so generous to like, you know, charge you just a 1.7% interest rate on the tax you owe suddenly on, you know?
Yeah.
They give you generously 10 years to pay back your whatever $100 billion in taxes or whatever, which is crazy. I mean,
I mean, it looks like the latest I saw is it looks like this wealth tax is going to pass. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll find out when they – but Senator Manchin or something was noted as saying he's in favor of it, or he's okay with it. You know,
really?
And he was like one of the last holdouts. And there's some senator from Arizona that I haven't seen her opinion on it.
Yeah,
but
Sinema,
yeah. If she's okay with it too, then I think it's going to pass. I mean,
So I know we're not like – we usually don't talk politics here, but this is important stuff, I think.
For Tesla, it's important now.
Yeah, so there's different views. Obviously, like, for example, Gary Black is saying 0% chance this is going to pass, right? It's like impossible, right? I actually think it's unlikely to pass. I think it's just – it's something that it's hard to regulate, hard to – like, what if your stock goes down, like, in half or 90%, you're left with this huge bill that you can never pay back. It's like crazy.
That's true.
Yeah, there's a lot of different question marks. And I just think it's a hard thing. And I think it's going to create so much bad will between billionaires and the government. And not just billionaires, but think about everyone underneath that too. You know, like 100 millionaires or whatever. Like, they're going to look at this as the government as like completely AWOL. And you're going to see probably a lot of, I don't know, leaving the country, et cetera, moving assets, different places, et cetera. I think it's going to be bad news overall. Yeah. So I don't think it's going to pass. But one of the concerns is the risk of if it passes, what does that mean? And the way I look at it is it's a big question mark of how much the Democratic Party is just following the herd. You know, like, for example, you know, a few people say $3 trillion. So everyone says, okay, it has to be $3 trillion, right? And it seems like with Senator Manchin and with Sinema, they're like the two who are saying, wait a minute, let's think through this. Obviously, there are a lot of criticism against them from the Democratic Party. Yeah. But my question is, out of the 48 Democratic senators, how many of them are independent enough in their thinking to look at this wealth tax, this mark-to-market, as saying, this is unfair. This is just ridiculous. Yeah. Let's just stop this, right? Is there anyone in that 48 of the herd that will...
No. Their top priority is to get reelected, and they know if they go against the herd, their chances of getting reelected is a lot less, in my opinion. So
I mean, that's my fear. Like if that's the case, then oh my gosh, it could get messy, man.
Yeah. That's why we need more entrepreneurs running for government. You know, like I know Chamath was talking about running for governor of California. That would have been amazing. You know, or like, we need more. Like, I know everyone, a lot of people that are fans of Tesla hated Trump, but he disrupted the political establishment big time. We need more disruption of the political establishment by entrepreneurs going into office. There's not enough of that, you know. And, you know, I think Elon commented on a tweet not long ago about that. Someone said entrepreneurs are better allocators of wealth or something. And it's true. You know, entrepreneurs understand business. They understand how the world works, you know. And there needs to be more of them in government roles. Yeah. I don't know how to encourage that.
Yeah, the problem with entrepreneurs like getting into government is like the best entrepreneurs like to get things done, you know.
Yeah.
And government is like probably the worst place. I mean,
worst place. But if you get enough entrepreneurs, if you get enough Andrew Yangs and such, you know, in there, mm-hmm. maybe there's hope, you know.
Yeah.
It seems like without that, it's just more of this going on for years to come, and it could just be worse and the kind of like a slower demise of the United States.
Yeah, sad, yeah, but definitely. Solving the money problem says it won't pass. It's just political pandering. I hope so. I hope so. The thing is, the Democrats need to find somewhere to get the tax money. Or I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
Do they really need to find? They need to tell themselves they found somewhere, but do they really need to find? You know, they might just print more money. They'll leave it to the Fed to figure it out later, and the Fed will like, all right, let's do more money printing or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
And it's just maybe it's mostly political pandering. I mean, that's what it, you know. Every time they talk about some of this stuff, it seems like that's the case.
Yeah. V. Patel says, "Are you worried about Elon moving out of the country?"
Yeah, I mean, I have this kind of like in my head, like this clock, like there's the doomsday clock of, you know, mm-hmm. like how much closer we are to destroying the world every time a major event happens or whatever.
Yeah.
And this type of thing, I have like a clock in my head, like the chances of Elon relocating to China. And this inches the knot from like 5% to like 7 or 8% now. You know, if this passes, maybe like a 10 or 12%, you know, so I could see China trying to, you know, woo Elon maybe behind the scenes already, but you know, they must recognize him as being not kind of the greatest entrepreneur of our time, you know, so I would think they would love to have him as like part of their country, you know, as a bigger part of role of their economy and such. So maybe they'll try to offer him different ways to support him and give him more, you know, to relocate more of his businesses over there. He's a fan of China for the most part. I think he says those things genuinely. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's like behind the scenes, like, you know, there's good and evil with every government, or there's good and bad with every government, but China, he sees a lot of positive in them.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think Elon will leave the US.
I don't think so either, yeah, but I mean, chances are slowly inching up, I think.
Yeah. A big part of it is SpaceX. Elon needs to be in the US because SpaceX SpaceX is a very US enterprise. It just has
it
to
is.
With like
but if
all
he gets
the
blueprint down of those starships and like what's to say he can't just start producing them like crazy in China and launching them from there. I mean, his goal is to get life multiplanetary, whether it's from China or the US, whatever is going to be the fastest, he'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the US just has in terms of space, I think they have the most power.
Sort of talent. I think engineering and talent, they have the most.
Yeah.
But if he gets his blueprint down for doing it, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can see, I see what you're saying, but I don't think he wants to leave the U.S., but, you know, the U.S. administration is not treating him well, you know, it's not going so well.
Yeah. All right, Emmett, nice chatting. And thanks everyone for tuning in to this live stream, for those who, you know, are participating in the chat and everything. Congrats on everyone who, got to see all-time highs today.
1,000+.
Incredible. Incredible moment in Tesla's history. Of course, it's far from done. It's just
far
like
from done.
Moment in time to reflect and to
Rejoice.
Enjoy. Yeah. And it's basically back to work, as Elon would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good chatting. Thanks, Dave.
Even though as a shareholder, it doesn't feel like we're doing much work.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not doing much work. We're just like researching things, trying to keep our safety and holding Tesla as long as we have. And it's that, you know, it's stressful, but yeah, I mean, it's but it's we're not working with our hands on our hands or knees building cars and rockets. That's for sure.
Yeah. All right, guys. Take care, and we'll see you guys in our next talk. All right.
See everyone. Good chat, Dave.
Okay.
All right.